Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
If you appreciate Issues Etc., our 24/7 music and talk stations, and our daily verse-by-verse Bible study, The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
And dare I ask, O Lord, peace even in this chamber, now and evermore. We ask it in the name of the monotheistic God, Brahma, and God known by many names, by many different faiths, a man and a woman.
For a Christian, the attitude we have towards this pandemic is completely different than it is for the rest of the world around us. The rest of the world around us does not live with hope. And so for them, safety is the highest good.
When you study biblical chronology, and if you're very careful about it and use careful use of the ancient sources, what you find out is the Bible is accurate over and over again.
I think really that the only two logical and reasonable options are to say Jesus claimed to be God, and either he understood himself to be God or he was lying about being God.
This is Nancy from Fort Wayne. I listened to Issues while being isolated with the COVID virus. I am so thankful to have this program to help pass the time away.
Here's the headline from the New York Times, how white evangelical Christians fused with Trump extremism. It's a walk through some of the events and some of the voices from the storming of the U.S. Capitol 1 week ago today. A tragic event. We know how many people wearing face paint and buffalo horns were in the Capitol. Do we know how many Christians were actually there? And in this series of interviews in the New York Times piece, are they talking to mainstream Christianity? Are they talking to white evangelicalism in the mainstream or to its fringe? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, January the 13th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about that New York Times story, how white evangelical Christians fused with Trump extremism. Terry Mattingly of Get Religion will be our guest. Then what will prove to be a fascinating conversation on critical theory with Dr. Adam Francisco. How do you know if critical theory, this notion that the world is divided into oppressors and the oppressed, and you most likely are in the former category, how do you know when your school, your church, your place of business has bought into critical theory and what would it mean for you? Dr. Adam Francisco of Concordia University Chicago will guide us through that conversation a little bit later. Joining us to talk about a New York Times story, how white evangelical Christians fused with Trump extremism, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Do we know how many Christians stormed the U.S. Capitol a week ago?
We don't, but that's because we don't even know, that, at least that I've read, an even more basic fact. I put out a request on Twitter the other day, and it was, does anybody know how many people were at the Save America rally called by the Women for Trump and that Donald Trump spoke at, you know, before the march to the Capitol that turned into a riot? I'm seeing estimates all over the place. You may be aware of the fact that estimating crowd size in Washington, D.C. has turned into an astonishingly politicized situation. And for the most part, the authorities no longer like to estimate the size of crowds because the activists claim all kinds of things. These can be arguments about how many people at March for Life. I've seen press coverage that says there were hundreds there. Then you look at the photographs from drones or airplanes, and it's clear that it's, you know, several hundred thousand people, and all of this is politicized. Anyway, what I'm hearing is that approximately 8,000 to 9,000 people, maybe 10,000, were at the rally. Now, this raises a crucial question. We have three different activities going on here, and we'll get to the Christians in it in a second. Three activities. One, we have a legal, maybe unwise, I would certainly say so, a rally on behalf of the President of the United States attempts to overturn the current status of the presidential election. That is a legal rally with a permit. Nobody has accused anybody of doing anything illegal there, which can be scary because we're, you know, getting unofficial reports or even some people saying that they've gone back home and lost their jobs because they attended the rally, et cetera. Okay, next, we have a group of people who broke off from the rally and marched toward the Capitol. Whether or not they were encouraged to do so by the president, who apparently made like one reference to being peaceful, but then used the word fight, you know, over and over and over in his speech. We'll let the lawyers and the legislators argue about that. But we have this second crowd of people who broke off and marched toward the Capitol. Then we have a third group of people who went inside the legal fences that were the security zone around the Capitol. At that point, they've now gone from being protesters to engaging in an illegal activity, in an activity that to some degree is illegal. Then we have a fourth group of people. That's who crashes through the doors, who damages federal property, other than maybe the fence, who attacks officers, who kills an officer, who is in there carrying handcuffs for the purpose of kidnapping, who's armed, who set the pipe bombs, who's carrying armor-piercing ammunition, and who has been involved in communication before the riot, sometimes it seems days before the riot, in which it's pretty clear that all of that was planned and that there was hostile intent. That fourth group includes people who are chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." Now, of course, they had been told over and over that Mike Pence was going to take an action that would save the Trump presidency. And then when it became clear he wouldn't, you have this incredible sense of betrayal in the words of President Trump and others. Okay, so we have four groups of people. Now, back up from that. How many Christians are in each of those groups? Now, we're getting a lot of coverage that talks about this fusion of Christianity and Trumpism that's on full display at the rally. We've got all the banners. We've got, in my column this week, I used the banner that summed it all up for me is, "Jesus is my Savior, Trump is my President." That was a very popular banner, you know, at the rally. And Jesus saves and a cross and all kinds of stuff. And there has been some good coverage of that. What I've been trying to figure out, however, and you can, in some of the stories, this is clear, and in others, it's not. How many of those Christian groups, church groups, whoever they were, how many of them went inside the fences? Sometimes we're not getting a clear differentiation between Christians who came there to take part in a rally and took part in a legal rally versus Christians that either planned to or extemporaneously chose to violate the law and turned into what can accurately be called rioters instead of demonstrators, protesters, political loyalists, whatever. And finally, this is where, you know, the lawyers and the court trials and everything else will have to be done. It's increasingly become apparent that the riot and the attack on the Capitol was planned, and that it was planned by people who are now planning attacks, or saying that they plan to, on state capitals, or even potentially somehow the kind of social media-driven inauguration ceremony, or whatever ends up happening in Washington when Joe Biden is inaugurated as president. So that's a typical Mattingly long answer to your question. But when you're reading these stories, are you clear which of those four groups we're talking about when you're reading the story?
No, I don't see the, well, in the more general coverage, I don't see the New York Times making any distinction between, say, a person who just showed up to see Trump speak at one end of the road and a person who at the other end of the road later that day would be, well, breaking through windows and things. I don't see a distinction being made there at all.
Yeah. So once again, we have legal rally, legal march to the Capitol, illegal invasion of the Capitol security zone, and then finally illegal attacks, potential lynchings, I mean, pipe bombs, weapons, the whole bit. There's four different levels there. Now, I have seen some references that make it clear who's who and what's where, but it, as a rule, it all seems to be running together. And when you get involved in legal proceedings, things tend to get very specific. And this also brings us back around to the fact that this is all supposed to be happening. And I think listeners need to hear some of the language of this New York Times piece, which I'd like to stress, and this is not to blame the writers. At Get Religion, we never presume that the writers of an article are responsible for the final edit. But here's a crucial passage from an article that's written by two graduates of the most influential evangelical college in America, Wheaton College. Okay, so let's read this. The blend of cultural references and the people who brought them made clear a phenomena that's been brewing for years now, that the most extreme corners of support for Mr. Trump have become inextricable from some parts of white evangelical power in America. Rather than completely separate strands of support, these groups have become increasingly blended together. The potent mix of grievance and religious fervor has turbocharged the support among a wide swath of Trump loyalists, many of whom describe themselves as participants in a kind of holy war, according to interviews, and many who are swimming in falsehoods about the presidential election, and now the riot itself, said the aftermath of Wednesday's event has only fueled a deeper sense of victimhood and being misunderstood. Now, the key line in all of that to me is that the most extreme corners of support for Trump, now that's saying something, the most extreme corners of support for Trump have become inextricable from some, keywords, some parts of white evangelical power in America. Now, for me, the key word is power, because power to me somehow implies institutions, and it implies to me institutions that have power. And that's where I'm starting to read now and figuring out who are these evangelical institutions that are supposed to be backing the most extreme corners of the Trump support. That's the big mystery for me. Have you had similar thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, you're articulating my thoughts exactly.
And I can't find them. If you know anything about evangelical power in America, you know that it tends to be centered in publishing companies. It tends to be centered more than anything else in denominations and parachurch groups, non-denominational parachurch groups. At the very least, you're looking for colleges, universities, seminaries, and really influential large churches. So I started started trying to think of who these power center people might be. And I guess to some degree you have Liberty University with Jerry Falwell, who of course has now fallen in his own way. You have Liberty University somehow identified with Trump in terms of largest institutional support. And you have a couple of individual pastors. You have a radio show host, two or three. But I keep trying to find the parts of institutional power linked to evangelicalism that have become connected to, quote, the most extreme corners of support for Mr. Trump. And when you say most extreme, you're of course saying QAnon, Proud Boys, and maybe people who are even beyond that level, who are out there in the dark parts of the web planning restraining devices, kidnapping Nancy Pelosi, and some of the other things that people have talked about, and apparently things that were discussed online. And there are security analysts who are now digging into all of that and looking at it. I see a lot of vagueness here, but I want to separate from the fact that I don't think there's any doubt right now that QAnon and some pretty wild stuff linked to Trump has become quite common in a lot of evangelical pews and maybe even in a few pulpits. What I'm saying I have not seen is its connection to institutional evangelical power, even some parts of that power. But I'm going to have to raise a subject that you and I have talked about before. I will also say that one of the hardest things to cover in American life right now is the entire world of non-denominational and independent churches and the people who lead them. And when you look at something like the list of who the supporters were of Trump, his Evangelical Advisory Committee, you notice a couple of things right off the get-go. You notice that, with a few exceptions, almost all of them are from non-denominational, independent, and often charismatic or Pentecostal churches or organizations. You also notice that the best-known names on the list, with maybe one or two exceptions, are all people from the past of the religious right. And by that, I would say James Dobson or Ralph Reed would be good examples. So once again, where are the evangelical power brokers that are a part of this Christian nationalist conspiracy? Or are we talking about a fringe of evangelicalism, which is real and does have power of some kind, but not institutional power, is my point.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a New York Times story, How White Evangelical Christians Fused with Trump Extremism. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. When we come back, I want to stay on that point about President Trump's Evangelical Advisory Board and their theological direction or lack thereof. We'll be right back. If you appreciate Issues Etc., our 24/7 music and talk stations, and our daily verse-by-verse Bible study, The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, please include a bequest in your will or trust for these worldwide media resources. Bequests aren't subject to federal tax or capital gains taxes. Ensure your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren the opportunity to listen by including a bequest in your will or trust for Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you looking to use your Thrivent funds to beautify your church? Never fear. Ad Crucem has the solution. See our liturgical banners, baptismal or confirmation certificates, gifts, Christ-focused greeting cards, and posters. Alternatively, stock up on a set of Christmons or Christmas ornaments. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
This is Jeff Schwarz, General Manager of Lutheran Public Radio, with a message for listeners in the Mountain and Pacific time zones. We pledge to have Issues Etc. podcasts posted daily, no later than 5 p.m. Mountain, 4 p.m. Pacific. This will allow you to download and listen to the latest Issues Etc. podcast weekdays during your evening commute. Again, if you live in the Mountain or Pacific time zone, download Issues Etc. before you leave work and listen during your drive home.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a New York Times story, how white evangelical Christians fused with Trump extremism. Terry Mattingly is our guest, senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. So, Terry, before the break, you were talking about President Trump's evangelical advisory board, and it consists, as you said, mostly of non-denominational, more or less charismatic kind of parachurch organizations and leaders. Their theology is consistent, I think it's fair to say, with the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Could this explain why the New York Times found attendees were basically saying, like Lindsay French quoted at the end of the story, that God told them to do it? She said she had a burning bush sign from God to participate, following her pastor's urgent pleas to stop the steal. And here's her quote: "We're fighting good versus evil, dark versus light," declaring that she was rising up like Queen Esther, the biblical heroine who saved her people from death. Is that maybe an explanation for why the New York Times found these kind of quotes?
Well, it certainly is possible. I think an anecdote that ran in a Wall Street Journal story is even better, where a man says he arrived at the doors of the Capitol and he didn't know whether he should go in, and so he asked God whether he should go in, and I didn't hear no. What I felt was God pushing me through the door. Now, I know some pretty standard Baptists and evangelicals who have talked about burning bushes or putting a rug out, you know, to see if God gives them some sort of direct answer. I can honestly say that in one or two points in my life, I have prayed that kind of prayer myself. I think it's really interesting to read right now the analysis of Dr. Albert Mohler of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, who's really going deep on some of these theological questions, noting that the motivations that are showing up in these articles, and the New York Times is just one of several, what's showing up in these articles are matters of emotion and personal feeling and claims of direct inspiration. You're not seeing anything that's coming from Bible analysis or even contact and cooperation with veteran Christian leaders, or let alone the leaders, once again, of major Christian institutions. I did a little bit of work on the churches of the people that are quoted as being totally representative of, you know, the Christians involved in this movement. And it's really fascinating. One of them is a tiny church in the hills of North Carolina that is so small it doesn't even have a website. I can't find out if they're Southern Baptist or Primitive Baptist or any kind of Baptist, other than the fact that the word Baptist is in the name, because they have almost no online or web presence at all. I mean, not even the fallback of having a Facebook page, or at least not one that I have found. I mean, and when you look to something like, I think it was Yelp or some other, or Google, where people are allowed to leave reviews of having attended the church, there was one single review of someone who had visited the church. That's not a hot spot of evangelical institutional power, but they're in the New York Times, and they're being quoted as being very, very typical of the people who stormed the Capitol. Now, if you found a D-Min student from Southern Seminary or some other major institution who said, "I'm inspired by what I read in my class about Daniel and the book of Revelation, and I decided to march on the Capitol," at that point, you've got some interesting stuff to investigate. But I think it's pretty much small churches, independent, mostly charismatic networks. Julia Dean has been doing great writing, both at Get Religion and Religion Unplugged, on how this is the Trump era is tearing apart the whole world of charismatic Pentecostal prophets and the people who believe they these power prophecy people who have words from God to do this, that, and the other. And now they're beginning to tear into each other over whether or not they were hearing valid prophecies about the fact that Trump was going to be reelected. There was no way he could lose. If he didn't lose, that would have to be because of betrayal, you know, and a host of other things, some of which overlaps with language that we read in these stories about the riot.
So let's talk a little bit about the juxtaposition of Christians marching with the F-bomb shouters. The F-bomb has become, it's not a bomb anymore. It's hardly a hand grenade. It's so ubiquitous in our political discourse now.
Well, it certainly is a question that I wish people would raise. When you listen to the recordings of the actual violent moments of this attack on the Capitol, the Category 4, the people crashing through the doors, breaking windows, attacking police, etc., their vocabulary and what they say they're there for certainly doesn't sound like a Baptist Sunday school to me, or even an independent megachurch Sunday school. This sounds like some people who've already had a few things to drink that day and probably frequent their, you know, their neighborhood pubs and speakeasies way more than they frequent churches. And this goes back to the whole issue of the division early in Trump, and I stress early in the Trump era, primaries, between the original core people who supported Donald Trump versus the people who came on board later and kind of voted for him as the lesser of two evils. Albert Mohler has been questioned, and he admits it's totally valid to do so, about his decision after saying in 2016 that he would never, ever support Trump. He ended up announcing before the election in 2020 that he was going to vote for Trump as a way of opposing the Democratic Party platform, the Democratic candidate, and that the only real choice he had was to vote for the Republicans, and that meant voting for Trump. He stressed, we live right now in a timeline politically where we have a binary choice. We only have two choices. Now, I'm a third party voter. I've chosen a third door, but I understand the people who got caught in that lesser of two evils world. And at that point, some of the most interesting dialogues after the riots are between people who reluctantly supported Trump, those who rejected supported Trump. And I'm talking about evangelicals here, pro-life, very conservative evangelicals. And even some people who got sort of enthusiastic about Trump, because they didn't see, they thought he was rude, they thought he was crude, they didn't like his personal life, but they couldn't see anything really bad happening. Those three types of evangelicals are now having some fascinating dialogues. Now, with almost no exceptions, they are totally rejecting the rhetoric and the reality of the riots. And they are saying that this was a nightmare vision of what happens when demagogues yank the chains of American liberty and democracy. There's some strong stuff being written out there right now by extremely mainstream evangelical leaders representing the largest institutions of evangelical life in America. So I hope the press hangs in there and continues to cover it. So a final theme there related to your question about Sunday school meets the F-bombs. What do those people have in common? I think what they have in common is what the sociologist James Davison Hunter, in his book To Change the World, describes using a term from his field of sociology of religion, resentment. These are people whose lives are primarily defined in terms of being wronged. Now, of course, you've got resentment on the left like crazy as well. But the people with the flak jackets and the people with the Jesus Saves banners both feel a strong sense of resentment of how they're being treated in America, how they're being viewed in America, what's being said about them. And this resentment, this crystallized sense of being wronged could have put them inside the Capitol doors at the same time. And I think if we find Christians involved in violence in particular, if the courtroom evidence shows major or even minor Christian involvement in the worst elements of that day, I predict you're going to find people who felt terribly wronged in the last couple of years, and their victimhood and their resentment drove them, well, as Mohler would say, drove them into a position where they forgot that they are sinful and fallen as well. Mohler makes a valid point. How in the world can people who take sin seriously and who take fallenness seriously believe that they're somehow going to be rescued by a political messiah? That's, to me, one of his strongest theological points, and something that I hope somewhere a journalist or two other than me and a couple of others quote some of these people saying.
So I know that the reporters don't write the headlines, but someone did write the headline. If you're going to write the headline, "How White Evangelical Christians Fused with Trump Extremism," don't you need to contact and get some quotes from an evangelical leader like Dr. Albert Mohler?
Certainly. And once again, in the crucial summary paragraph, the most important words are white evangelical power. Now, better than some journalists, the reporters and editors here use the word "some parts of white evangelical power." But I still want to be shown power. I still want to be shown institutions with influence and power other than this network of kind of the power prophecy people related to non-denominational, charismatic, and Pentecostal life. And Julia Dean continues to do reporting on that and will continue to dig into it. That part of it's real. And by the way, she's been saying that at Get Religion for like 2 or 3 years now, that was the side of the story that nobody was getting. And when you talk about those Pentecostal networks, you are about as far into free-swinging, non-denominational, emotions-trump doctrine or ordered doctrine side of American life as you can get, which is not to blame all Pentecostals for that. I'm saying that's not the Southern Baptist Convention. That's not even the Assemblies of God. It's certainly not the African American Church of God in Christ. It's a lot of things, but it's not institutional evangelical power. I wish the words had been different there. And by the way, that whole section of the story, there isn't a single attribution to anyone. The only person, the expert who gets called in here, other than these powers and whatever, is a secular scholar studying Christian nationalism, and I guess that's valid. But I'm getting pretty cynical about this. It seems that there's a type of journalism out there that its basic rule is, if you want to understand conservative Christians, you really need to talk to liberal scholars. And if you want to understand liberal Christians, you really need to talk to liberal scholars. And there's something missing from that. There are many, many very conservative evangelical scholars, historians, theologians, sociologists, whatever, who are studying these trends right now, take them extremely seriously, probably have been critical of Trump for quite some time, and they're not showing up in some of the most important stories that are being written, and they should be there. They know evangelicalism way better than some secular sociologists who are kind of delving into this as a matter of politics.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he is founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, it's time to talk about something that is very pervasive. You might not know what to call it. You hear woke, you hear oppressor, you hear oppression. What's behind all of it? Critical theory. We'll define it, we'll discuss it with Dr. Adam Francisco of Concordia University of Chicago next. The name of the Lord in the life of the Christian, the church, and fulfilled in Jesus. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is Blessed Be His Name, Revealing the Sacred Names of God. It's written by regular guest Dr. Kevin Golden. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House and request Blessed Be His Name, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Blessed Be His Name.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Oh, morning star, of morning star, shining bright across the
world. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Bethlehem Lutheran, North Zulch, Texas. Faith Lutheran, Rogue River, Oregon. Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania. Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida. Mount Olive Lutheran, Duluth, Minnesota. Pilgrim Lutheran, Kilgore, Texas. Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Rathdrum, Idaho. St. Matthew Lutheran, Hawthorne Woods, Illinois. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. And Zion Lutheran, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.